Hey, everybody, you've got Kimberly and Chris. Keep your questions coming. First one's from Justin. He says, when you get a response from a homeowner that they've gotten it taken care of, that is one of the go-to responses. Let's just say they're actually telling the truth. How long does it take to get the scheduled foreclosure taken off the list we received from Real Estate IQ? Just trying to gauge my follow-ups to verify it was actually taken care of and when to follow up with them. All right. I'm going to let Chris, because he goes into this a lot better than I do, but the short version is it's never going to be taken off the list for that month. So the only way to see if it was actually taken care of is if it was not on the struck-off list. The struck-off list shows the properties that actually sold or went back to the bank. So if it didn't end up on that list, means it didn't make it to auction. So they did get it taken care of somehow, but it could have been something like stay of execution or something. Chris, do you want to kind of go into the deeper, because this is a good topic because we've got a lot of big dogs working the foreclosure list.
Okay. Yeah, no problem. So yeah, this is one we get a lot and that I talk about a fair amount in the foreclosure seminar. So I'm going to San Antonio this February first Tuesday. So if you're in San Antonio, come out and join us at the courthouse. Oh shoot, Kimberly, I don't think I've gotten that flyer out to you guys. I'll get that done right away. So when a property gets filed for foreclosure, that's the notice of default or notice of sale. That is a public recording. Okay, so it goes into the public recording as a recorded document. Okay, nothing unrecords that, right? If you wanted to formally take it off, you would have to file a notice that removes it from that notice of sale, right? And nobody would ever do that, right? Because a bank doesn't have to do that. They're doing a public notice that says, hey, this is going to foreclosure. But when somebody works something out and they don't take it to foreclosure, they don't have to go back and correct the record, right? It just doesn't show up for foreclosure sale. And that's how you know. And if you're not at the sale itself, then you're going to end up wanting to get hold of the struck off list, like Kimberly said. That is a list that FLS Online provides. I don't know who else provides it. I will tell you, it is a manual list. So they go out, they have somebody at the courthouse that manually tracks these transactions and creates that list. So the struck off list is a list of properties that did go to foreclosure sale and foreclosed. It either went to a third party investor's purchase, or it went back to the bank, reverted back to the bank. But that doesn't come out for several days after the foreclosure from FLS Online. So follow-up is the key, right? Follow-up's where is the money at? Follow-up is the key to your transactions, because if it did not foreclose, then it is still an opportunity, okay? Until somebody buys it or it forecloses, it's an opportunity. So definitely follow up on those. That's your best bet. Is to just keep following up. So that's what we'll tell you about that.
All right. I appreciate it. Wes says we're entering a seller lead and the printable contract isn't working. So on REM Matcher, if you add in the seller lead and try to use the contract generator, that is something that is not working. Now, that being said, the app that we are building, and Wes, I know Becca's on the alpha version, but I think you're an Android user, so we're building the Android version right now. Within the app, we're going to have a whole bunch of auto generation. It's not going to be just the TREC contract, but it's going to be actually really every document that's in Shinoa Seller Toolkit. So if you guys go into Kimberly's Corner, go to Shinoa Seller Toolkit. This is the pile of documents that we've sent over to our developer, and he's coding in. So we've got, let me expand this a little bit so you guys can actually read the file names here. But we've got the TREC, the rehab, the rehab helper's not gonna work, but the authorization, the loan assumptions, the seller disclosure, I mean, all of this stuff is going to auto-generate. So it's going to allow you guys to receive it via email, and then you guys will have the option on your iPad or whatever, tablet, you guys are going to be able to have them sign just right there in person. So that's where we want to get you. One of the dreams that we also have is that you guys are going to be able to use TREC contracts as a marketing piece. So you're driving by a house, You run some numbers based on some of the stuff that the app is giving, and you guys will be able to generate a contract, send it to the printers. The printers will print it, put like a, I call them love letters, but you know, just kind of an introduction letter. Hey, you know, I was driving through your neighborhood. Your house really spoke to me, whatever. I've included a contract. I'm so excited about your house, and just use it as a marketing piece. So we're not quite there yet. We've got to get a print house aligned, which we have one in mind, but we've got to get, there's a lot of ducks to get in a row to quack. A lot of things to get in a row to be able to get that done. But we're really excited about the app. So bear with us while we're doing that. For now, you guys can download the Trek. So here's the Trek. Let me download this. Mine behaves a little bit different because I'm the owner of the files, for what it's worth. So when you guys open this, you guys can actually type right on here. So you're able to do that. And then you can upload it to DocuSign and get everybody to initial and whatnot. So they finally made this editable with this 2018 contract. All right. Hey, Sharon. She says, where can I find the foreclosure list for San Antonio? Is there a county website you can access for free? So you can access the county website. I couldn't tell you which site it's on. But you can, there is free access someplace. Now, the question is what condition those leads are in, essentially. The benefit of downloading them from someplace like FLS Online, since you're in San Antonio, it'd be FLS Online, or getting subscription to Real Estate IQ, is you're going to get them in a essentially print ready format. You're going to be able to mail merge them. You're going to be able to sort them and all kinds of things like that. Every county is going to be a little bit different if you're going to be able to just download a file or whatnot. So I would recommend either getting a subscription to FLS Online or to Real Estate IQ. So I'm going to put those out there. If you're going to do Real Estate IQ, reach out to Joseph at realestateiq.co. And he's a big dog and also works for them. And he'll be able to take care of you and let you know whatever big dog discounts we have going on right now. So the subdivision. Subdivision, sometimes you're going to know that just based on, driving through the neighborhood, you're going to see some of the subdivisions. Every once in a while, you'll find it on Zillow. So putting that information, as you're adding a seller lead, that's not a have to thing. Sometimes it's just something nice to know. So that's not a required field. Hold on one second, guys. All right. So how do we determine the estimated home value for the seller lead? So let me go back into REM Matcher. And I'm going to go to manage seller leads. I'm just going to click on this one. So I can just kind of show you guys what this looks like. When you go to valuation, we've got a couple of different valuations here. So we've got the tax value. So tax value, seller estimate, and seller last list price are actually imported from some of these other tabs. So you can't actually type on these and change them at all. The CMA value and the investor estimate does actually change. So you can actually type on them here. So you guys can change that number out. So the way I look at them, CMA value. So I think of it as a range. So most properties, you're going to have a range when you do comps. So the comps might range from 220 to 240, whatever it is. Well, I'm always going to do my math based on the lower number because you never know when the market's going to shift or things just aren't selling as well by the time you're done fixing your property or whatever. So I always want to use the lower number. So I put that as my investor estimate. So you can do like the 220 here. And then I want to do the 240 here. Just so I have a record of it, kind of the high side of it. Now you can click on all of these and you can see these colors are changing on you. And what it does is it takes the average and builds it out. So, but the tax value, we don't do anything based on the tax value. We don't do anything based on the seller estimate because they might be crazy. And then again, we wouldn't really use the CMA value. So you're just going to use that investor estimate. Oh no, we're out of questions. Chris, start thinking of something to talk about. Michael says, how do we get SEO features added to our website? So I think you made SEO features added to your website. So if you are on the websites that you go into REA Matcher, click on seller websites, and you can play with your websites here.
And just so you guys know, SEO stands for search engine optimization. SEO, search engine optimization.
All right. So if you mine are still kind of hiding in here, but if this is the only place you have, and then the sites are very obviously an older version. If that's where your sites are, there's really very little you can do for SEO. Now, with these newer sites, there's a whole bunch of stuff that you can do on the back end. You would have to log into the back end. So, Michael, if you're not on the beta, all big dogs are eligible for these beta websites. So just send me an email if you guys are interested in those beta websites, and I can get you hooked up with those. And then you'll get your own login for these sites so you can go in and make some of those changes and access some of those features. All right, next is Justin. He says, I know MLS is a plus place to get comps, but what are your thoughts on Propelio CMA tool? So there's several other sources like Propelio, Real Estate IQ. I can see the website and I can't think of it. listingspark.com/marketcompare. 1 second, guys. All right, sorry, dealing with bug guy. He wants payment, you know, they're picky that way. So there's several other places that have essentially their algorithms. So they're gonna just use some math. Zillow's an algorithm as well. They're gonna use some math, Real Estate IQ. You know, I know I haven't personally used Propelio, so I can't speak for them at all. I know with Real Estate IQ, you can kind of pick and choose certain comps. You don't like them for whatever reason. You know, they're not really an A or B, or they're too far away or whatever. So it's not completely an algorithm that it's just going to kind of, I'm going to use the word I'm thinking is it just kind of vomits out a number. It doesn't quite do that just because you can pick and choose there. That being said, you can use that number all day long to negotiate. That's what we love about those programs. You can get your foot in the door. You can run some quick comps on the fly, get a good number to negotiate with and be pretty confident in it walking out the door after talking with your seller. But never, ever, 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 ever buy a house without having actual comps run. So never, ever get to the closing table without having actual comps run. It will bite you in the hindquarters. Now, many big dogs have compared and contrasted, and they're usually pretty happy. But you don't want to be the one time that Propelio is way off or something, and then all of a sudden you're upside down and backwards in the deal. So again, as part of your due diligence, you have to get comps run out of MLS. Oh, let's see. Guys, keep your questions coming. Down to our last question again. Juan says, a seller in Corpus called me. Her house was just put on the foreclosure list for March, sending her a contract to her today, but not sure there's enough meat on the bone. How can I make sure that I can help her out and make some profit on the deal? It's all about the numbers, Juan. So let me pull something up really quick. We've got your deal. All right. So if you guys want to, you guys can send an email to deals@loveamericanhomes.com and just put test in the subject line and you guys will get this autoresponder. And it says, you know, hop on our call so we can talk, you know, talk to everybody about it. But a lot of times we just do it by email for you guys. You're going to fill out this information best you can. Please don't delete this. We get that every once in a while. Somebody's like, number four, it's three. And I'm like, three what? So don't delete these words here for me. But, you know, I see a lot of big dogs will like put it bold, like next to it or something like that. But this ideally is what we're looking for. So we can really evaluate it and give you some direction. This is all about the numbers. You're going to have to tell her, you know, you've got to cough it all up. I need to know about any liens you have on your property, mortgage, other liens, crazy ex-husbands, you know, whatever. You need the whole story to be able to help her and tell her I'm going to find it all out in title anyway. when Tidal pulls all this. But, you know, to be able to help you, I need as much information as possible now. And sometimes, you know, I was talking to Big Dog the other day, and I'm like, this is the deal. You don't just walk away from it, you run away from it. It was just ugly. There was just nothing to be done for it. They were asking like $60,000 too much on like a $120,000 property. It was just run. So sometimes there's just nothing to do for a property. Sometimes it's literally the only thing to do for it is to let it foreclose because it's got so many liens and problems. So research, talk to her, get it to title, find out what's on the title, lien wise. And then we're happy to review it for you and say, hey, this is, you know, wholesale this puppy off or sub to this, or it's a short sale or run away from it or like, you know, whatever. We joke that we have 12 strategies. I mean, you guys heard that a lot as you guys came in, you know, oh, we have 12 strategies. There's a lot more. Let me see if I can find this file really quick for you guys so you guys can see it. I know what it looks like. Another thing is what the heck I named it. So I'll see if I can find it for you guys. But it's a whole bunch of the different strategies. Strategy. Is it this? Yeah, it's this. All right. So let me show you guys this. So I mean, I think there's about 20 in here. So I mean, without actually counting. So some of them are really just tweaks of the other. So, I mean, really at the end of the day, we've got about 12, but you know, sometimes it is let it foreclose and, you know, walk away and run away, which of course we don't have on here, but, but you guys can look at stuff like this. So you guys can, try to figure out just based on the amount of equity, you know, if it's only got 90% equity, so you got to, you know, follow this line up. You've got this one, you got that one. This one starts at 90%. This one's just wrapping up at 90%. So, and then we've got this little fun blue line here. And so what that denotes is after you get past this line, it becomes a harder deal. So it's more unlikely that it won't, you won't be able to do a house swap at 90%. This one's starting to be a problem at 90. This one at 90 as well. Buy and hold's really starting to be a problem about 85%. So if you guys need this file, shoot me an email, and I can, get you guys this file if you guys want it. So, you know, we've just got a lot of different ways. I know Shanoa has a tendency mostly with kind of wonky deals. She'll go through and she's like, okay, not a wholesale, not this, not this, not this. Oh, you can do this, you know, or whatever. She's really good about going through this and kind of going through the check boxes. All right. Justin says, thanks for the feedback on the comps. I do now have access to MLS, but wanted to know if you guys have a video tutorial on how to do comps. Yes, we do. I'm still playing with it. So let's go into Aria Matcher. I'm going to start from the top. Do Big Dog Texas.
I want to show your screen, Kimberly.
Oh, you're no fun. All right. So training tab, Big Dog Texas. Click on MLS contract special topics. And we've got MLS training. So MLS training, this one's based on the Austin MLS, but Houston and Dallas are also based on Matrix. So it will work very similarly for you. Buttons are in a little bit different spot, but overall, it's basically the same system. If you're in San Antonio, God bless you. San Antonio is still in the dark ages, and their MLS is definitely wonky. And the short version is, if you have MLS access, just practice. It's really good to practice on deals that you see posted in the RIA group or in the Big Dog group. So you can get used to running them, because then you kind of have that data point, you know, somebody's going to say, okay, ARV is 235. And then you run the comps and you're like, ARV is like 175. Where the heck they get that? And so you can, you know, mostly if it's a Big Dog, reach out to them and be like, hey, you know, I was playing with those comps and, you know, I came in at 175. And then you see their comps and maybe they cherry picked them. And Big Dogs are usually pretty good about not cherry picking their comps, but if you just get it from any source. So when I say cherry picking, they might go back really far. They might have a way bigger house or way smaller house, way newer house, way older house. Geographically is one of the big cherry picks, mostly for the wholesalers in the area. They have a tendency to geographically go way far. I mean, I've seen I've seen comps up to 6 miles away, which is a different planet. You can't comp with something that's 6 miles away. So any, you know, anyways, going back, just play with it and get going. So Juan's going to work. He's going to call his seller. Chris, I'm going to let you answer Wes's question. So he's got a question about the trek. So let me go in there. So one thing before I kick this over to Chris, let me go back. My screen's too wide and my thing is okay. So we've got the trek contract, how to fill it out. The Chenoa goes line by line of the Texas contract. Wes, we're still going to answer your question, but as I was writing contracts, I would come back to this and I'm like, okay, I got all these except, you know, 6B, whatever it was. And I don't even know if there's a 6B, but I would just come in here, fast forward and just get that answer for myself. We also have in Chenoa Seller Toolkit, we have the drumroll, please. We have all the completed files. So what we did is we went through and hand wrote what the contract should look like and things that you should know. So if it's a sub two, you're going to do certain things, for earnest money, stuff like that. So, and then little notes we get in red.
Yeah. Just leave it on that price right there. Let me just use this contract.
Okay. So here we go.
So, and you've got, another kind of, so you can see three. A is cash, B is the sum of any financing, and C is the total. So C is the sum of A and B, right? If let's say you've got a seller who's getting, you know, you're going to give him 10,000 cash, and then you're going to take their deal subject to, okay? So if that's the case, and they have a $100,000 loan that you're taking subject to, so you're going to pay them 110,000. Then you would put in A, you'd put 10,000 because that's the cash they're getting, right? B would be 100,000, even though you're not getting a new loan, that's the sum of all financing, okay? So 100,000, they're financing to you, you're giving them 10,000 cash, and C would be the total of those two, which is 110, okay? So hopefully that that answers the question. You know, you decide what your total price, you decide the structure of the deal, how you break it out, you know, this helps with that. But you could also put C addendum in here and then use a, you know, your subject to addendum, or the, not the sub to addendum, we use the assumption addendum to make it a sub to, but you can write in that addendum the structure of the deal, right? Total purchase price is 110,000. You know, purchaser is taking over a seller's existing loan for $100,000 and paying $10,000 in cash at closing to seller, right? So you can put it in layman's terms that way as well, and draft all this out. And the title company will, you know, the contract is just a blueprint for a title company to be able to structure all the correct documents, okay? Nothing survives closing. So if you do something wrong on the contract, yeah, it's binding. And so one party could hold the other party to those wrong terms. But typically, it's not always something that's material that's messed up like a price. Sometimes it's something, you know, like a legal description or something like that, right? So you can correct those. Nothing survives closing. If you want anything, any terms in this contract to survive closing, you have to draft them separately to structure them to survive the closing of this transaction and continue on. Or at closing, you know, this lease agreement becomes effective, right? So that's how you would do that. And let's see, Chenoa's got here, if sub two, put zero cash in A, put estimated loan balance in B, put total in C, check loan assumption addendum for a seller finance addendum. But see, that's if you're giving them no cash. Okay, if you were giving them cash at the table on top of taking their loan sub two, if you're getting it just for the debt, then that would be correct. Okay, zero in the cash portion, the loan balance and the finance portion. So anyway, there you go. Hopefully that helps. But watch Chenoa's video, guys. She goes through this in detail. And I can't tell you how many new investors and new students and stuff I get calling me on their way to their first appointment saying, hey, Chris, can you tell me how to fill out this trek contract? I'm headed to an appointment right now. I was like, well, you know, we've had a couple of months of talking about this. You know, good idea to go ahead and watch these videos in the special topics. There's a lot of great information there. Do your homework first, do your training first. But once you are done with your expedition course for the week, these are some great videos for you guys to do. They are tremendously helpful in supplementing your training and education. And in fact, I think these should be, for my students, I lay these out and make them mandatory for them. Okay. Go up just a little bit, Kimberly. So foreclosure, let's talk about, so MLS, that is not just MLS training. That is how to do a CMA. It's what that is. I wish that we would restructure that labeling. It's not how do I use MLS. It's how do I do a CMA and come up with a value in MLS on a property, okay? Your contracts, she goes through them in detail. Foreclosure lists, they're short sales. That's fairly new. I forgot about that one. But the foreclosure, from beginning to end, I cannot tell you how many questions this will answer for you guys. And it covers everything from timelines to how to best to market to the foreclosure list, to how foreclosure works, to how you interject bankruptcy in there, all that stuff. You guys need to go and watch these supplemental audios and videos. They are tremendously, tremendously helpful. Mandatory part of your training, people.
All right. Yeah. So guys, make sure you guys are coming through here. If you guys are working the foreclosure list, you have to listen to this. I'm not saying that just because Chris is on the call. I mean, this call is the bomb. It covers everything that you could possibly want to know about the foreclosure auction. It's going to teach you just everything that you could need to tell a seller. You know, hey, this is the next step of the process, because a lot of sellers, if you Google I'm in foreclosure, what happens next, you're going to get 800 pages of I can fix this. So, that's not going to help you. So, a lot of people, they just want to know what's next. So you being able to explain to them what the process is and what's going to happen next is going to be the best thing. So make sure you guys are listening to this. You guys should listen to also the tax sales, because a lot of people in foreclosure also have tax issues. So knowing what the tax stuff is also going to be good for you. All right. Wes says, thanks. That helps me out greatly. So Wes, glad to help. Randy, about the app. I don't want to go into it too much because I just have a handful of people in the iPhone app. But yes, you'll submit a new business launcher to get the new sites. If you have a separate seller site hosted someplace else, you can leave it. You would just need a new seller domain. Does my password change? No. So your password is still going to be your Canis Major password. It's that funky, like eight digit or whatever. Hold on one second, guys. All right. And then should the phone app and the phone app should work anywhere in Texas. If you guys are on the alpha version, right now it doesn't work outside of Texas for some of the data pulls and stuff like that. Richard, regarding your question, yes, that it would solve it if you move over to the new site. And we're out of questions. So, Chris, do you have anything you want to talk on? Any big questions that you keep answering for some of your coaching?
So let me, hang on. Come it. Thank you. All right. Let me just talk about a few things while, we're waiting on some more questions. So do go ahead and continue to get your questions in, guys. Let me talk about the foreclosure field trips for a second here. So if you go to Big Dog Calendar, then for the all your workshops are up here, and these are part of your training also, okay? Every one of these should be mandatory as far as I'm concerned. But here's the foreclosure field trip, okay? So if you click on this, it'll tell you what the dates are. So here's, you know, information on the field trip. These are the dates that we've got. So this is February. I'm going to be in San Antonio, right, Bexar County. And I just put out the flyer, so they'll get the flyer link to this. And I apologize for the lateness on that. Next month, I'm in Dallas County. So I go back and forth. I go out of town and then Dallas-Fort Worth. Out of town, Dallas-Fort Worth. Out of town, Dallas-Fort Worth. Because I live in Dallas-Fort Worth. This is me, talks about me and my background. So you can get some of that if you don't understand why I know all the junk I know. Click on these to register. That way you're RSVP'd and you'll get updates, anything like that, right? So the foreclosure field trip, here's the flyer, just so you guys can see it, okay? And what we're going to do. So we're going to go to the foreclosure sale. We're going to go to the county courthouse in Bexar County, and we're going to watch them foreclose on properties, okay? And there's a whole art to it. And, you know, the flyer here will tell you where to meet and timing and all that stuff. Make sure you give yourself plenty of time to park. But it would help tremendously because I actually do a more in-depth review of the foreclosure process in my foreclosure call in REI Matcher than I do standing out here on the courthouse steps, right? Because I don't have, you know, an hour to go through all this stuff. I have, you know, 30, 40 minutes, and I go through most of it, and I'll answer any questions and all that stuff. But you'll really help yourself by doing some of the homework. We'll go ahead and do some properties. I'll pull probably four properties, and I'll try and put those out a day or so in advance. And so then we'll see if they come up for sale in the San Antonio in Bexar County. And if they do, we'll see what they sell for, right? I'll do some quick CMAs on them, some quick rehab estimates, and some stuff like that. Then we'll figure it out based on our MAO or our maximum allowable offer and whether or not that was a deal, if we would have done it, and see what things are going for, right? It really kind of helps me also keep a pulse on the market. So so definitely, you know, do not travel for this. If you're in Austin and you're like, oh man, I really want to go to that, I'm going to go to San Antonio. Don't do that. Wait till I come to Austin. This one's not worth traveling for. It's a couple hours. 3 hours, you know, at best, just wait till I come to a city near you. But definitely come out and join us, because they're a lot of fun. So let's see, what else, Kimberly? Let's see if we got any more questions.
Yeah. Randy says the T-47.
When can I use a T-47? So a T-47 is a survey affidavit. And it recertifies a survey. Now, most people don't realize, I believe, to recertify a survey, the surveyor still has to be in business and in good standing, if I'm not mistaken. You can check with the title company, get more details on that. But there's rarely any trouble with a survey, you know, within the last 10 years. I've never seen one denied, okay? But a T-47 is a survey affidavit that says that the seller selling the property certifies that there have been no material changes to the survey layout and that this survey is still good, et cetera, et cetera. And that I don't know that it's a form in there. It may be, but I don't think so. And it just sort of just recertifies that old survey. And they may have, like I said, they may have to get the surveyor to confirm. But that's what you can just Google it, Kimberly, if you want to see one. But that's what it is. That's what a T-47 affidavit is. T-47 affidavit. Survey
affidavit. I've just never heard of it. So,
see, I just knew all that off the top of my head.
We're the owners. We're familiar with the property. We're closing, best of our knowledge, since whatever date. There have been no construction, boundary issues, conveyances. Signed blah, everybody blah, blah, and blah, notary.
Yeah. So, yeah. That's just one form, right? An affidavit, you know, you can structure it in any form you want, right? It's just going to have all the correct content for whatever you're doing.
All right. Richard, send me an email about the new sites. Randy says, I'm looking into Noah Seller Toolkit for a form to assign a contract. So those are, that's in here. So let me, I'm going to move this over just a little bit so you guys can see. So we tried to do it a little bit more towards, and there's actually a table of contents. So you guys can actually, let me go up a folder here. So we've got the quick print. So you guys can actually, print this whole puppy off, just in one big batch. I mean, it's 37 pages. So instead of you downloading and opening 30, maybe like 20 something files, it'll save you your sanity a little bit here. But if you go into all blank, we tried to do it more towards like the order that you would kind of need them versus like some sort of alphabetical order. So we've got an assignment of contract. This is actually, this one is a check form. So it's real easy for you guys to use. So, and then we've got the completed one in there as well. So,
hey, Kimberly, Randy had a little additional information, doesn't change anything. And we answered his question, but would you go ahead and show my screen for a second?
No, you've had enough.
I want to give you guys a tip here. Okay. So this for, if you've never seen a survey, this is a survey. Okay. This is a survey on a property that I did a flip on with a couple from Austin. They got a weird lead from some internet marketing they did. Because I had traveled to when I was doing Brent's workshop, because I was a big dog just like you guys, right? Even though I've been in this business for 35 years, I mean, I went through the training and I'm a big dog just like all the rest of you guys. And I was attending Brent's workshop and I traveled for it and met a great couple down in Austin. So there are several of these workshops that are worth traveling for, because the relationships you meet in this network will serve you the rest of your life. So they got this weird internet lead, and they just texted me and said, hey, Chris, we got this lead in DFW. Would you like to chase it down for us? I said, yeah, sure, no problem. Love to do it. They gave me the address. I ran a CMA. I called the homeowner, went out and put that deal under contract in probably 20 minutes. And it was a great deal. I mean, it was a deal where she was, it's one where she was behind on taxes, and she had a contractor that had rehabbed her house and done a decent job, but then bailed on the last like 5% of it. You know, she got 95% of it done. And so she thought the house was horrible because it was missing a few baseboards and needed this, needed that, and some stuff like that. Right. We got that house for $110,000. Put $20,000 into it and sold it for $215,000. And anyway, my whole point to that is that's this house. So this is a survey, and she did not know. She goes, well, I don't know if I have a survey or not. I said, where are all your closing? Because I was sitting with them at the kitchen table, right? Where are all your closing documents? Surely you have a big file or a big stack of all the closing documents when you bought this house that they gave you. She said, oh yeah, I've got that. You know, and so she brought it, and it had two or three loans from prior homes in it, right? We went through this whole stack, probably 12 inches high of crap, until I kind of found this house, and we started going through all these loan docs. And sure enough, right there in that stack of papers is her survey. This survey right here that saved me $500. Okay, so Randy, my point is, you know, when you're talking to your seller, if they say they don't have a survey, say, well, can I help you look through your loan documents? And take the time to sit down and go through them. A lot of people don't know what a survey is, don't even know they got one, right? They got a loan, the lender handles all that. Half the time they never even see it, but they do get a copy of it in all their loan docs. So, so make sure that you do try and find that, because it's, like I said, $450 to $500 on a traditional residential lot for a survey these days. So anyway, that's it. Thanks, Carolyn.
Hey, real quick, could you kind of walk through kind of how to read this thing? You know, not like a 20-minute dissertation, but just kind of the highlight reels of things that you should be looking for, how to kind of translate some of these things. Because okay. Some of the big dogs, you know, they got their survey and their packet of stuff when they bought their house, but they've never really looked at one of these things.
Well, so a good survey, right, or a newer surveyor, right, you've got the survey here, and the red line, these are your property line, Okay. And you'll see, you see this fence? These are fence posts, right? These little ticks right here. Those are fence posts sitting right on the property line. So they did a really good job. A lot of times, you know, the fence posts will run off this direction or run off in this direction, right? And so you're not right on your property line. The green, of course, is the outline of the structure of the house, right? And these are measurements, right, that the surveyors put on there. And if you look here, right, we say, okay, well, what's this stuff? What's that stuff? And this surveyor actually did a pretty good job of taking all those things and, well, I guess this is a generic one, but, you know, of giving you a legend of what different stuff is. So if you're looking at, you know, easements or so right here, you see this easement right here? That's a 5-foot utility easement, right? That means that you own this property and you're responsible for maintaining it, but you cannot build a permanent structure in here, right? You can pile a bunch of junk in there and do stuff. But if you put, like, if you were to build a, you know, a little 8 by 8 or 8 by 10 shed to store your stuff in, and you put it in this easement, it's feasible that the utility company comes through here, whether it's telephone, there's your telephone post, right? A lot of times if you've got the telephone post in your yard, and I hate this because I've got mine in my yard. You got the telephone post. You also have the cable post. Okay. That serves all the lines up and down. Right, because this lot right here, 27, that's the backyard of some other yacht. So, you know, so utilities are running in a 10-foot span because he's got the same thing, a 5-foot easement here. So you got 10-foot span here that all the utilities run back and forth along the back of your property, right? Like mine, I've got electric back here, and the electric feeds up to the side of my house, right along my property line. And unfortunately, it was built just right at the year before they started requiring armored, not insulation, but, I can't remember what you call it, but when you have to run your electric through a conduit, that was before they required conduit. So I had to move my pool over 3 feet, right? Because I had a utility line right here that was not in conduit. If it had been in conduit, I could have put my pool right up against it. Right. So really screwed up my backyard, but beautiful pool. Anyway, so let's see, you know, this is the back tile patio. Here's an AC unit. Okay. This right here, right? You see this little squiggly line? All you do is read it, underground electric service agreement. So I'm assuming that the electricity, I don't know what that is. The power meter, I believe, was right there. This is going to be so the line goes down, but I don't know where it goes. I don't know if it comes to the front or the back. It goes to the back because these were exterior power lines. So they go down and underground up to here, right? Is what was happening on that one. So, but you know, this right here, this 25-foot BL, that's a building line, right? So you have to be 25 feet, right? This is going to be your property line. It's not the curb. It's not the street. It is your property line. Okay. And you've got to be 25 feet back from your property line to build your first vertical structure. So you can have your driveway here and all that, but that's a city requirement, right? It's considered a building line, but it's considered a setback line, right? So 25 feet setback line. You've also got setback lines on the sides. I don't know that they're listed on here or what they are. So you'd have to check with the city on that. But, you know, when you talk about a zero lot line property, you can put your property right up to the property line. That's zero lot line. Okay.
Hey, Chris, quick, Randy was actually asking about that build line, that 25 feet. He said, how does that work when somebody wants to add a carport past the build line?
You'd have to check with the city zoning and see if they'll allow that. A carport could be allowed because you can actually build a carport just over the driveway and not have it attached to the property. So it wouldn't be part of this property. Like I said, typically it's your vertical structure, but that means, you know, solid building. You just have to see if the city will allow it or not. I can tell you on this one, they will not. My truck, if I put it up against the garage door, was coming, you know, to about right here. So, you know, I know for a fact that they won't allow a carport in this on this property. That's why, because of that, you know, nobody had converted garages in this area, right? But a lot of people do that, convert the garage, build a carport. But you've got to just check with the city to see if they'll allow that.
All right.
This is for a builder. Like if you were building new construction, your foundation cannot cross this line.
All right. Is there anything on the second page that's on the highlight reel?
No, this is just
a little. Well, he's got surveyor notes. What's all these surveyor notes? Shenanigans here.
Where are they? So report a surveyor, legal description. So there's your legal description, block 13 community. So that's just
regular,
that's just a
technical
legal. Yeah, it's not meets and bounds, which would be a real pain in the butt. Legal description used to perform the survey was applied by blah. Survey only shows improvements found above ground, right? Underground footings, utilities, etc., are not part of this. Surveys inclusive. This is just all boilerplate stuff, but you can read it. Look right here. Any FEMA flood zone data contained on this survey is for informational purposes only. Research to obtain your information at FEMA.gov. So if you if you're getting a loan, your lender is going to tell you. Your insurance agent will tell you if this requires insurance or not. But go to your insurance agent. They're the ones that can tell you if a property requires flood insurance or does not require flood insurance. Okay. Don't be afraid to use somebody like Mike, you know, as part of your due diligence process. So right here, all corners marked are set at a minimum of 1.5 diameter, 12 inch iron rebar with a yellow cap. The yellow caps were gone. Actually, I guess they put them up, but these right here. So, if you go out and find your property lines, you'll see a pin, right? And a lot of times they have a flat head on them from number one design, number two from hammering them down. But they drive a pin, you know, 3 to 5 feet, a metal pin like a piece of rebar in the very corners of your property line so they can find it with a metal detector, right? So those pins are actually out there in the ground. So anyway, that's a survey.
So you have it. So hopefully y'all learned something. All right. Randy, I don't know what your reference is about calling the seller. So we've got one last question. I'll do announcements and then we're going to put a fork in it. Chris, you need to boogie?
I do. Thank you. I've got to get dressed and everything. So thanks, guys. Good talking with you. Thank you, Kimberly. Talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Chris. All right. All right. So Juan's got a question. Guys, if you have any last questions, go ahead and put it in. Otherwise, we're going to put a fork in this here pretty soon. Juan says, went over it in a way. So pardon the, on the Corpus deal, I mentioned what would be the purchase price to get it under contract with, if we send it to Deals Love American. She owes 42 and owes 3 in back taxes. So she's in it for about 45, but the rough estimate, it's worth about 84. So one question that I would have for you is about how much work would need to be done for it. So let me know how much you think in repairs or updating the house would need. And also, if you know the year of the house, that sometimes gives me some clues as to some of the things that we might be worried about when it comes to repairs. Like if it's a 1920s house, like there's so much stuff that can happen. Another question is, you know, with it being in Corpus, is it right on the coast or is it in from the coast? You know, so do we have to worry about hurricane stuff? I think there's certain code things that it just, because you're in Corpus, you have to have certain things. But if you're right on the coast, there's another extra set. So that'd be another thing that I'm worried about. That being said, bring out the handy dandy calculator. So let me make me the presenter again. Show my screen. We're going to show the calculator. All right. So one thing that we do is you guys have heard the 70% formula about a million times, 70% of ARV minus repairs. Ta-da. Now, one thing that we don't talk about a whole lot is if a property is under 100,000, we start using the 60% formula. If you're working on a $200,000 house, so let's use 200,000 times 0.7. Let's say it's $40,000 in repairs. So that's $100,000. So you're going to be in it for 140. And then you should make on a $200,000 house, you should make 10 to 15%. So 10% is 20,000, 15% is 30,000. If you get wow, surprise, that AC unit just died while we're working on it. Yeah, you have to go put another $6,000-$7,000 in. I know, depending on the AC unit, but you guys get the idea. It's not going to bomb your budget. You will still make some money on this. If you have a $100,000 property, you're going to make $10,000 to $15,000. Well, if you have to put in an AC unit for $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, all of a sudden you went from making decent amount. I mean, $10,000 to $15,000 isn't anything to sniff at. But if you have too many surprises or you went over budget on your rehab, all of a sudden you're losing money on the deal. So that's why we use the 60% formula instead. So if ARV is going to be 84,000 times 0.6, we're going to start at 50,400. Now, you told me that Chickadee's in it for, she owes about 45. So it was built in 1954. Holy cannolis. This one might be, I'm thinking this one's going to be a short sale. This one might be a let it foreclose. This one, who knows? Now, there are 1954 houses that are in great shape. They've been brought up to code. They've been well-maintained and everything else. Now, that happens to be the exception to the rule. So you could, you know, talk to her. Now, you don't want to say when did you replace the carpet or what's the, you do want to say that. You don't want to say, how's the carpet in the house? She might say the carpet is awesome. Now, it could have been replaced in 1972, so it's shag carpeting, and she thinks it's the bomb diggity. No. So you want to ask things like, when was the last time the carpet was replaced? When was the last time the inside was painted? When was the last time the kitchen was updated? When was the last time the bathroom was updated, painted, whatever? Another thing you can ask, do you have small kids? Because if you personally have small kids, you know the handprints that happen on walls. I just caught a glimpse of one of my light switches, and I was like, oh my gosh, it needs to be Lysoled. my kids aren't all that small anymore. Another thing, if they have pets in the house, the carpet's going to die a lot faster as well. So that's another way to kind of tell. So as you're trying to evaluate this property without physically seeing it, most people have smartphones so they can take pictures for you, or maybe a FaceTime, Skype type thing that you can kind of walk through and see the house for yourself. But you really need to get some boots on the ground. If you are going to continue with this property for any reason, you're going to want to get some boots on the ground. We do have a couple big dogs down in Corpus, so you can partner with them and get those boots on the ground, unless you want to get your butt in the car and drive 6-8 hours, depends on where you're at. So if Chickadee owes 45 to get everything paid off, right now you're like $50,000 to donuts. There's more than $5,000 in repairs in this house. You can do $5,000 just in flooring. I'm thinking this is going to be a short sale, or it could be just let it go to foreclosure, unless somebody's looking for a buy and hold. Now, if you can find somebody who wants a buy and hold, so if it's 80, I don't remember what the number was here. If it's 84,000, now I did 86, I think before. No, yeah, I did it right. So 84,000 times 0.8, let's say, that's 67,000. So it's possible you could find an end buyer that would be interested. So 67 would be the, you know, the initial math minus repairs. So if you can find an end buyer that would be interested in holding it long term, then that would be possibly a way to deal with it. So you could potentially wholesale it to someone. So you could make a couple bucks there. For you personally, if you're going to try to keep it, you're probably, you know, unless you want to pay probably too much for it, but because you're going to hold it long term, you know, but your typical buy, you know, for a fix and flip, we're going to want you to buy it a lot lower. So it still could be a short sale. You could potentially sell it on a wholesale, something like that. So there's a couple of options out there. But I would, you've got to find out what the current status is. With 1954, I'm also worried about electrical, if it's been brought up to code, if the plumbing has been brought up to code, some of the areas they were using cast iron and some crazy stuff. You're going to want to know the roof. You're going to definitely want the foundation. So that was one thing I was talking to a big dog the other day. And, you know, they're like, okay, I think it's $20,000 budget. I was like, if you go a dollar over, like, this deal, like, starts imploding. So I was like, you need to get a roof guy out there, a foundation guy, a plumber, an electrician, you know, contractor. Just get them all out there, because an AC guy, because if you have any surprises, any big surprises, like surprise, you get to replace the entire plumbing system, it's going to implode the whole deal. You know, if you're going to go forward with it, trying to fix and flip it, if some of these numbers happen to work out, or she can bring some money to the table, then you want to get every contractor type person out there to check on this house so you have no surprises. Yeah, no interest in keeping it. That was great info. You're awesome. All right. Well, glad to help. So hopefully somebody else learned something along the way there too. You guys saw Big Dog Calendar. If you guys haven't been on there in a while, make sure you guys go check it out. We've got Big Dog Cruise on there now. So if you guys are thinking about going on the Big Dog Cruise in May, tonight, where are we? We're at the Four Points out in Coppell. So come check us out. Next month is the Real Estate State of the Union address. This is a really good time for you guys to get your butt to RIA if you have not been to RIA recently. Shanoa will be doing the highlight reel in Mastermind, so you guys know what's going on in your area. So make sure you guys come next month to Mastermind so you guys can find out what's going on in your city and see how your market's tracking. You want to be one of the first ones to know if the market is shifting. Houston's been really stable. DFW's been dipping a little bit. I haven't heard anything about San Antonio positive or negative, and I think Austin's been pretty flat, I think. Excuse me. So, but you want to know exactly where your market's at so you guys can make decisions. You know, every once in a while I have a big dog and they're like, oh, I want to build some like giant thing and it'll be done, you know, and ready to sell in 12 months. And I'm like, I don't know. I send those to Shanoa. I make her give those recommendations, because I can tell you, you know, barring us having some other epic event, like a 9/11 type event, the market should stay pretty stable, at least for the next 3 months. I'm pretty confident in that. There's no canary in the coal mine. I haven't heard anything for the state of Texas. So I'm pretty confident what things are going to be in about 3 months. 6 months, still fairly confident. 12 months, who knows? I mean, there's all sorts of stuff that can happen in 12 months. So, you know, I really hesitate when you guys try to get into properties that you guys are going to be doing a fresh build that's going to take you a long time because of permits and cities and whatever, or doing a long-term fix and flip, because it needs a lot of work. So, but Shanoa's happy to evaluate those. She gives you guys those recommendations and helps you guys with those gotchas as well. So, we don't want you guys to say no to a property just because, you know, oh no, what happens if the market turns? What if the market stays where it's at? You guys can make a lot of money. Woo! So we just want to make sure you guys are protecting yourself. So yeah, you might make $80,000 on the property because the market did turn a little bit, but you still made 50. You know, I'm sure no one here, I mean, there's 21 of y'all still here. No one will cry with a $50,000 check in their bank. Yes, an $80,000 check is prettier, but I don't think anybody will cry with a 50. So we just want to make sure you guys are buying it right to stabilize yourselves if a market does change on you. So I don't see any more questions. We went over a few minutes. I'm going to shut up. Have a great day, guys. See you guys at your local RIAs, and I will talk to y'all soon. Bye, guys.